So 2 years ago, that was my first Samba XP. You know, I proposed that, okay, we need to do this. We want to get rid of duplication. Also, we want to, you know, have every commit tested against clustered Samba, so we know that it continuously works. And CTDB was released independently from Samba, and so we had always this problem of which Samba version will work with CTDB version, and then, you know, backward compatibility and all those issues. So we wanted to make sure that when we release Samba in future, it's Samba plus CTDB. Well, this is always a always an important goal. So right now we have very few active developers of CTDB. Both of them are sitting here. That's me and Martin. Martin's going to talk about some interesting things which we are planning ahead. Next. So after a few discussions on how to get the CTDB tree and how to how to remove the duplication, we figured out, and a few months after Samba XP in 2013, we actually merged the tree. So last year, we had, nothing much had changed. We had merged the tree, but the builds were separate. Samba has moved ahead from autoconf build to waf build, whereas CTDB was still stuck with autoconf build. So that was still pending. We didn't have a way of doing an integrated build, so because both were doing different build systems. And also one of the important goals was CTDB is this huge, monstrous code in one daemon, which does lots of things. So there is a lot of coupling between various components. So we want to split this monolithic code into, you know, smaller daemons, easy to manage. So first step was obviously, let's get this build working. So last year, Samba XP May, I talked about this, and by the time we actually got back to Australia, we had actually implemented the build. So it was fairly quick. It got into the it got committed 1 month later. So that part was done. Now next is we want to build Samba and CTDB together. Right? We don't want to build Samba separately, CTDB separately. So that's what I mean by top-level build. So when you configure Samba at top level, you say with cluster support and you build both Samba and CTDB. That's the goal. But the problem is Samba uses this libutil, which is basically a grab bag of utility functions, which has grown over the years. And we inherited that code in CTDB when CTDB project was started. And obviously, that copy got developed separately, and both of them have diverged. So we have a copy of libutil under CTDB, right? It's more or less the duplicate code, but it's different because it's diverged. So we can't get rid of that immediately. We need to do something. So we start looking at libutil and, you know, figure out, okay, how can we, you know, first of all, find out exactly the common components, get rid of them. That's easy. The next part is difficult. How do you now consolidate the changes? Some may be compatible changes, some may be incompatible changes. So then we start hacking libutil to figure out. Unfortunately, it's a bit too long. It was more work than we expected. So we go back to Australia, and I worked on it for a little while, but I gave up. I said, this is too much work, and I had to focus on some other things. So Martin takes over, and he spent a lot of time. Yeah, right. 2 days every week for next lots of weeks. And it took a lot of swearing, cursing. So yeah, some of the libutyl code is very legacy code. It's inherited, you know, from very early days of Samba. So everything includes a common header file, includes .h, which brings in all sorts of dependencies in every C file. So first of all, try to get rid of that. So then each, you know, libutyl has lots of files, and each one sort of implements certain utilities. So try to group them, okay, and remove unnecessary dependencies. So, you know, like ID tree is basically implements IDR-based tree, which doesn't really need crypto. It's a tree data structure. Why do we need libcrypto? Well, the only reason why we need libcrypto is because we need to initialize a random number. Okay. So yeah, so we had various things like that. So basically split out code, create different submodules, subsystems. So that's what we did. So whatever functionality we needed from libutyl for CTDB's purpose, we split that out as a utility, as a util core, as a core utilities. This was absolutely library code. That is, it required only things from lib directory. That means it doesn't include anything from source 3, source 4, you know, whatever. Then we started cleaning out CTDB's libutil. Okay, so get rid of duplicates and so on and so forth. One of the major problem was the logging code had completely diverged. We have completely different ways of logging in Samba and in CTDB. That created a bit of a hell. So after Martin spent a lot of time cleaning that up, we created a new system called CTDB Util. So now this, if you have seen what WAF build does, so in WAF you can create these subsystems, and then, you know, you can set dependencies of binaries on subsystems. So we created this CTDB Util out of the code in CTDB libutil. Then we had to get rid of a few extraneous features which we had added in CTDB, but which were never really used. So like log ring buffer and things like that. So we sort of, again, trying to replicate or reuse whatever is in Samba's libutil. Once we got to a stage that we could just drop CTDB util and use Samba util. Actually, Samba util core, right? Yeah, but we do a trick. We do a trick that when we are building CTDB standalone, we call Samba util core as Samba util. This is just a building convenience. And well, otherwise, we get the whole Samba util. And finally, we hook CTDB into top-level build. Yes. So after we initially finished the, you know, WAF conversion in 1 month in June, it took us nearly 4 months to get the complete integration. So this sort of indicates timeline. So this is where the we merged CTDB code. This is Samba XP. This is today. And here is where we did the initial milestone, that is converting autoconf to WAF build. And then here, we actually merged. We completed the top-level build. And it also gives you an indication of where the releases are. So after combining and completing the build, we released 4.2.0. which now has both Samba and CTDB. So if you build Samba from 4.2 onwards, you will get both Samba and CTDB. And you're supposed to, so you don't need to now think which CTDB version to use. It's already there. In the meantime, we are still maintaining 2.5 releases for older versions of Samba. So if you are somehow stuck with Samba 4 or Samba 3.6, you can still use CTDB 2.5 branches. Yeah, fair bit of work has gone in. We are trying to keep 2.5 up to date with what is happening upstream. So it doesn't have everything, but it has a lot of important features, and especially any bug fixes, etc. So this basically tells you the picture that you know, where the developers are coming from. And yeah, this is since January this year. Okay, so let's get into some more interesting bugs and defects which we have found over the over last 1 year. Now, so the problem statement is this: if you look at CTDB logs on a busy system, we many times found entries like this: high hop count, a large number, a database, and a key. Okay, now obviously there was not just single entry. Logs were filled with these entries, right? Because as the log the hop count increased, I'll explain what all this means. So where does all this come from? So it comes from this piece of code. Okay, it's a call send redirect. It does something, and there's a heuristic which says that, okay, if hop count increases by 100 roughly, then you log a warning. So that's the warning which you see here. And we are seeing this many times. That means hop count is increasing rapidly. Now, to explain what hop count is, I need to explain what record migration is. So CTDB supports cluster database, right? So your database is actually distributed across the cluster. So let's take an example of three-node cluster. So you have three nodes. And let's say one, you're looking at just one record. So node one is the L master. Now L master is basically location master. So which tells, or which node knows every time where actually the data is for that record. And D master is the data master. So that means the data actually resides, the latest version of that record actually resides on D master, which is on node 2. So node 1 is L master. So L master you can calculate just based on the key. So let's say a client sends a request. Now client here meaning Samba. So it wants to record this record. It's not locally available, so it tells CTDB, okay, get me this record. So we redirect this request to node 1. Now, do you see something? CTDB calls and redirect. Okay, so that's when this function gets called. So when you redirect a request, so here, when you redirect a request from node 0 to node 1, that's when that function gets called, and it increments the hop count. It says, okay, I need one hop to get to the record. On node 1, when the request is received, it says, I'm the L master, I know where the record is, and it's on node 2. It redirects the request to node 2. Okay, so now hop count has increased one more. Obviously, the data is in this node. Now, we want to migrate that record off to node 0. So it's a two-step process. First, we tell L master where the data is going, so where the new D master is going to be. So new D master is going to be node 0, because node 0 requested that data. So we reply to node 1 from node 2, saying, OK, here's the request for changing D master. And then we send from node 1, once it updates that information, we send that record to node 0. And then we tell Samba that, OK, we got your record. So now, when did this problem start? This problem started when we added a few patches which fixes some very weird vacuuming and recovery interactions. If you don't know what vacuuming and recovery is, don't worry about it right now. We'll talk about recovery maybe a little bit. But yeah, so it was after some patches were added, that's when we started noticing this. Also, the problem was hard to reproduce because there's no guarantee that if you do something, you'll always reproduce it. It happened sometimes, it didn't happen sometimes. And the worst thing was, sometimes when it occurred, it got fixed by itself. The worst kind of situation where you can expect for trying to debug this problem. Okay, so we started brainstorming and we came up with some ideas. Okay, what could really be happening at this time? So one idea was, okay, maybe there are two requests which are chasing each other. You know, so one request goes, says, okay, I want a record. So you migrate that record and the other request comes and says, okay, take it back. So before you sort of have a chance to send the data back to Samba, it again gets migrated off. But yeah, that was not really the case. I mean, we couldn't prove that that was the case. The other culprit was that somehow the header is getting corrupt. It means it's using wrong information. It's saying wrong demaster when we are trying to send the record across. So that was, and that suspicion became stronger due to these fixes. You know, so we did identify a few problems in that code. So there were a few fixes. We did them. So we patched that code. Problem didn't go away. So it's still occurring, but maybe it reduced a bit. And also another thing that was happening around the same time was the locking code in CTDB was getting modified. I'll talk about locking in the next problem. So as any other debugging method, instrument the code to print out few messages. So here is the sort of brief summary of logs which we extracted after instrumenting the code. So in this scenario, node 1 is the data demaster for a record. Okay, that's the key, which says hash. And we see the record is getting updated. Now, when the record gets updated, that means when Samba goes and changes the record, we increment the sequence number. So that's the RSN field here. So you can see it's getting fairly, modified fairly regularly. Now, at some point, node 0 says, OK, I want the record. So you can see here. So first thing we do is increment the RSN. And next thing is now we change the demaster, right? Because now we have to send the record back to node 0. So we have sent. So we have set this, and now we'll migrate that record. We'll hand off that record to node 0. So what does node 0 do? So first, it has to grab a record lock. So it has to get a lock on that record so that it can update that new information. And CTDB has this notion of non-blocking operation. Because it's a single daemon, it tries to do everything in non-blocking fashion. So it doesn't block for anything. So it tries to get a lock. It can't get it in the non-blocking fashion. So it then sends a lock request. So lock requests are processed in a separate process. So meanwhile, more and more requests are coming up. So as you can see, we're printing more requests. And now we start seeing those messages. So we start seeing this. There are two requests, and both of them start logging. And the numbers are fairly small at this point. We wait 2 seconds and see what happens. So now these two requests are bouncing very quickly between the two nodes. So point to note here is that we sort of migrated that record from node 1 to node 0, but we haven't yet written it to the database. And here is where we actually write the record, right? So we store that record into database on node zero. Surprise. And the bouncing request stopped. So now this explains why the problem gets resolved automatically. So the real culprit here is that there is a temporary inconsistency while the record is migrating from one node to another, because node zero will say node one is the demaster because it has a node one currently knows that because there are two nodes, node zero knows that node one is probably the L master, so you should ask him for the record. And node one says, no, I'm going to migrate that record. Node zero is the new demaster, so node zero has the information. Oops. So how do you fix this? Well, so we basically queue up all the requests if we notice that record migration is in progress. So don't process the request till record migration completes. Once that is done, then you do the process. That solves the problem. It took us nearly 6 months to actually chase and get to the bottom of this particular defect. Okay, so I mentioned about lock requests and things like that. So why am I talking about locks? Well, we have two kinds of locks in CTDB. One is record locks, as I mentioned here previously. So when Samba wants to get a lock or Samba wants a record, then CTDB has to migrate that record. And anytime it needs to update that record, it needs to lock the record in a database. So to modify a record, CTDB tries to get a non-blocking lock. If it doesn't, it creates a lock request. And there is other thing, which is database locks. So sometimes, one node can disappear, it can crash, or you might suspend the node from operation for maintenance or whatever. So in that case, CTDB has to do database recovery. Because it's a clustered database, once one of the node is out of the cluster, you want to consolidate that information. So it needs to freeze all the databases so it can do this database recovery. So where is still the lock scheduling issue? Well, you can have multiple requests for different records, right? Because multiple clients might be asking for multiple Samba processes can be asking for multiple records. Or they could be asking for the same record. And we have multiple databases. We have about 15 odd databases. In the original code, the freeze request or the, for database recovery, they were handled independently. But still, you need to worry about all the record lock requests. So I added this new locking API abstraction, which basically consolidates both type of locks into single API. You have queues for active and pending locks. Active meaning you, I'll explain in a second. The way you schedule a lock is basically you create a child process, which now blocks trying to get a lock on that record. Now it could be it's basically a FCNTL lock or a POSIX lock, or it could be a mutex lock, depending on which TDB feature you have enabled. So obviously we don't want to create hundreds, thousands of child processes, so there is a maximum number of active lock requests. So those are the active lock requests. Anything which is not yet scheduled is in the pending queue. Well, this is a very naive approach and it mostly works. Till the database recovery got triggered, Well, so what happens is that the active queue is currently full, and now you send a recovery for all database lock request. Now, because you cannot, you're still processing all the active requests, you cannot schedule the recovery. And it takes a lot of time. But in some cases, you might just block the recovery from happening because those lock those all database locks will never get scheduled. So they need to be, you know, prioritized in some fashion, because you want to finish the database recovery as soon as you notice that cluster is in inconsistent state because one of the node has died or a new node has joined the cluster. So we deal with the database locks slightly separately, and we schedule them immediately. Well, when we started using this, the performance was not very good, you know, and we are seeing lots of active lock requests all the time. So obviously, the single limit on the active record. So we had a limit set to 200. So there could be 200 processes or lock helpers, we used to call them, waiting for locks on records. So that really doesn't scale if you have multiple databases, because if one of the database record is under contention, then all the other databases may suffer because of this. So we implement per database limit. So now each database is sort of, each database can have 200 active requests. Now we get into another problem. Many times, as I mentioned, that because one database can have a very, a hot record, which a lot of SAMBA processes are interested in, then they can create multiple lock requests for the same record. So one thing is we can schedule them and then rely on Linux kernel to say fair scheduling. So as we create more lock processes for the same record, somehow kernel will make sure that they are they get the actual lock in some sort of FIFO fashion. Or we could add some code and we say, okay, check before you schedule a request whether there is already an active request for the same record. If there is an active request for the same record, don't schedule. Schedule something else. We did that, and now we start noticing that CDDB is using 100% CPU. Now, the active and pending locks are actually implemented as linked lists, right? So that means every time it has to schedule a lock, it has to go through all the lock requests and see whether it matches. So at one point, we saw there are 60,000 requests in the queue. And it's really, CDDB is spinning because it's just going through the pending queue, trying to figure out which request I can schedule, but it can't schedule anything because they're all waiting for the same record. So every time a schedule gets called, it parses this big list but does nothing. So maybe we need to undo this lock checking and let kernel deal with it, not our problem. Or we separate the database queues. Okay, this is another sort of not related directly because we are seeing the same record. But well, maybe if you split out the queues, you can deal with the other database records efficiently. We still have a problem with one database which has hot record. So, better solution is we really need a better data structure, which we can do a quick lookup to figure out what's the next record which you can schedule. It's a better solution, but not yet implemented. With currently, whatever we have is, it works reasonably well. We are not seeing the condition where 60,000 records are pending. The main reason was once we separated the database queues, the problem becomes very problem reduces drastically. Okay. Now I come to another interesting issue. So CDDB does because it's a cluster, it keeps monitoring different nodes, and when it notices things that aren't working as it expects, it takes some preventive action. One of these action is, when things go really bad, is to ban a node. Okay, what is banning? It basically removes that node from the cluster, okay, for 5 minutes. says, okay, you know, you are trying to send something, some request, and that node is just not responding. So whatever is the case, we ban that node and say, okay, this node is out of the cluster. So here's the observation, right? So one of the, so you have a cluster and it's working fine. There is some SMB IO happening and one of the node becomes inactive for some reason, right? Somebody shut down the node or whatever. So obviously the moment there is an inconsistency that one node has disappeared, CTDB tries to freeze databases and do the recovery, but it fails. So it retries again a few times and then says, okay, there's something wrong with that particular node, ban it. So it bans one node, tries to do recovery again, doesn't work. Retry, doesn't work, ban second node, and ends up banning all the nodes, causing a total outage. Okay. So here, one of the key thing is that, you know, it's trying to freeze database and that's failing. So that means the, you know, we are trying to lock a database and it's not working. But we have a way of trying to debug that information is if we can't get a lock for a certain duration, we try to debug that and lock some useful information. So if we know which database we are interested in locking, so we find out, okay, what all processes are holding a lock on that database? And we also dump the stack trace for all those processes. So it, if you know about POSIX locking or FCNTL locks, all that information on Linux is available under proc locks. So we can get that information. Unfortunately, we switched to using TDB robust mutexes feature, which improves the performance drastically, but we can't debug. Well, so we basically disable robust mutexes and try to recreate this problem. So we notice that CTDB fails to freeze this particular database. So here is the output of you know, the debug information. And we see here there is a lock helper trying to freeze databases, and there is some useful information here. And what is interesting is, where is the, here. So you see SMBD is holding some lock at this offset on the same database. Okay, so we look at, so Samba is holding a lock. We look at the stack trace of the Samba process. Okay, so you can see its exit. So it's trying to quit. So maybe it's processed, you know, client has disconnected and Samba is trying to close. It's trying to do a cleanup. So it's doing session log off. So, you know, SMB X serve holds the information about the session. So it's got a lock on that record and then it's trying to do something, you know, this DB wrap watch something. And now it's a lot of CTDB stuff. So it's waiting for CTDB to do something. To explain it all, Samba is holding one record lock on this database, and now it's waiting for another record. But it's not on the local node, so it has to get that record from somewhere else. So it tells CTDB, okay, get that record. So CTDB is in the process of migrating that record. Now, at this time, the node on which the record was there, that node has gone for whatever reason. Okay, so it has to now perform database recovery. It starts to freeze all the databases, so lock one database at a time. But it cannot freeze this database because Samba is holding a lock on this. So to freeze database, it has to lock the entire database, you know, all records. So we end up with a deadlock. And the only way CTDB can do anything is, well, I'm trying to tell you to freeze databases. You can't freeze databases. Okay, I'm going to ban you. So it bans one node. And the, you know, on a loaded system, there could be multiple Samba processes doing this at the same time. You know, that is the sequence of getting holding one lock and trying to get second lock. So you end up banning the rest of the nodes. So this in a nutshell is the problem. CDDB cannot freeze databases, Samba is holding a lock, and Samba will not release a lock till it gets a second lock. So how do you fix this problem? CDDB database recovery process currently is a serial process. It freezes all the databases. Once they are frozen, it does recovery of each database one by one, and then unlocks all the databases. So what's the solution? Okay, maybe what if we do database recovery in parallel? Don't wait for all databases to be frozen. So start freezing all databases. As soon as any database is frozen, that frozen means locked on all the nodes across the cluster, you recover that database. Because once you recover the database, you can now process all the lock requests waiting for the database. So now what you can do is, Samba is holding for that second record, waiting for the second record, right? But if we finish that database recovery, we can now reply to Samba and give the second record. Samba will do its stuff, release both the locks. Now we can freeze the first database. So that really completes the, you know, the major defects kind of thing. I'll quickly go through a few regressions which we unintentionally introduced. So just a quick background. CDDB runs with real-time priority, historic reasons, whatever. Let's not get into it. And CDDB creates lots of processes. As you see, 200 maximum children per database. So you could potentially create 2,000 processes if there are 10 databases. It also creates processes when it needs to run event scripts. So it has event scripts for monitoring and, you know, doing lots of things. So we have this wrapper, CDDB fork function, which basically does some creates a new process, does some housekeeping, resets the priority of that process. But at some point, we found that fork was too expensive on a busy system. So we switched to using vfork and exec. So now, instead of CDDB fork, we just call a separate binary, separate program or helper process. In this case, this is the event helper. Now, because we missed that CDDB fork was doing extra work, which we are not doing in the helper anymore, now all the event scripts which are run by the helper, they run with real-time priority. And typically, you would configure CDDB to manage Samba. And in 50.samba, this is the event script, the startup event starts SMBD. That means now Samba is started with real-time priority. And as you know, as you get requests, Samba forks and creates more real-time processes. And eventually, system just dies. Okay, I know I'm running out of time. I'll try to finish this quickly. So again, when Samba creates a child process, it basically sets up a pipe between the parent process and the child process. So it can, child process can send the result of whatever it's doing up the pipe, and we can notice if the child dies for some reason. So useful concept. And because we can do this error checking either in parent or child, many of the read-write calls on pipes, we don't need to check actually the return value, because we know what's either the condition is handled in child or in the parent. So we don't always have to check the value. But the compiler keeps scribbling. Okay, so we replace all read-write calls with sysread and syswrite, right? Which is nothing but just a wrapper which checks whether if there is any error occurred, which is unexpected, then bail out. If we expect this error, which could be E again, or if it's a non-blocking socket, then it's okay, keep doing it. So that's when the regression happens. So when testing on virtual machines, we notice that CDDB is consuming 100% CPU. And we trace the process and see, okay, it's busy, it's widely spinning in this right function. So what's happening is, we try to write, and you know, initial, let's say we want to write 1,000 bytes. We wrote a few bytes, and now the socket buffer is full. So we wait, but it's a non-blocking socket. So we can continue writing to it, 0 bytes, and every time write will fail with E again. But because we are using this wrapper, it keeps spinning, doing write. And because we are in VM, there are probably 1 or 2 CPUs. And the other end of that socket, Samba, is not getting any time, any CPU time, to actually read from the socket. So that's what it explains. So that's the problem. So basically, any time dealing with client socket, don't... I thought I had one more sentence there. So if you have failure with E again on client sockets where Samba is involved, then back off. You know, go through event loop and then come back and try again. So hopefully Samba has enough CPU time to get scheduled and, you know, read from the socket. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, Amite, for this instructive information. Are there questions or comments? Yes.
Which packages should we use as a user for CTDB? It's very hard to find current ones. Do you recommend to compile your own?
Well, if you want to use Samba 4.2.
4.1.
Okay, if you want to use Samba 4.1, then you would have to use CTDB 2.5, and the latest version is 2.5.5. And usually I build packages for RHEL, mm-hmm. RHEL 6. If you ask me nicely, I might provide for RHEL 7. But any other distribution which is not RPM-based, well, unless the distro picks that up, like any Debian derivative, then I have no way of providing that package.
Okay.
But for 4.2, Cernet provides the CTDB packages because it provides whole Samba package, right? And now CTDB is part of it.
Maybe I've got a solution for this. I tried CTDB with 4.1 and took the Cernet CTDB packages, the RPMs.
4.2?
For 1.1?
No. What CTDB packages did you use?
The RPM and send it through Alien and then install it on a Debian and it works. So.
Okay.
Just try.
The latest bug fixes, which are quite critical, you need to
2.5.5. Yeah.
And then.
So, what platform? What platform are you looking for the packages?
Linux, Red Hat, CentOS.
6 or 7?
6.
Yeah. So 6 packages you can find on the FTP.
Very hard to find.
I'll tell you where they are.
Okay. Thank you very much.